What if people with type 1 diabetes had the power to manage their condition without finger sticks? To always know their glucose levels and where they're heading with just a glance at their smart device? To customize alerts and alarms to help keep them in range? All this knowledge powered by a small wearable. Introducing the Dexcom G6. Make knowledge your superpower. For a list of compatible smart devices, visit dexcom.com/compatibility. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G6 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions.
Welcome into Tomorrow with Dave Graveline, the interactive radio network program with the latest in high-tech products and services and the experts who bring them to you. This is Into Tomorrow. Here's Dave Graveline.
October 5th, 2018. That's this weekend's Into Tomorrow broadcast. I am Dave Graveline. Thank you for tuning in. Horatio working out of New York and a bit under the weather. We hope he feels better very soon. And Erasmo working out of home in Miami Beach. We hope he also feels better soon. It's a whole different thing when we look into the control room and they're not our regular folk there. But here in the studio with me,
Chris Graveline.
And
Beth Gatrell.
There you go.
And I think Erasmo's just affected by the red tide.
Yeah. No, I hope not. Last we heard, it wasn't in Dade and Broward counties, but Miami-Dade and Broward. But
by the time you're hearing this, it could be.
Yikes. Yeah, issues. Anyway, tech news, not marine news, and commentary is this segment. And then we, of course, will jump to more of your calls. And we hope we hear from you anyway. If you've ever had a tech question or something pops up next Wednesday at 4 in the morning and you just can't get it out of your head, call the number that Beth is about to give you. It's toll-free from anywhere in North America. Skype into it if you'd like, if you're listening from anywhere in the world. We send you prizes for participating on the show because this is your show. You are the show, not just us yakking here. It's all about your questions, comments, concerns, your digital dilemmas that we like to help solve for you. So anytime, 24/7, call
800-899-INTO or 800-899-4686.
Well, there you go. Done as if a true radio professional.
Thanks.
And you are. So what do you got for us tech news-wise?
Well, soon, if you ask Alexa for the capital of Canada on Echo devices with screens, it will show you a Getty Images stock photo of Ottawa. Getty Images and Amazon are partnering to bring stock images up as Alexa responses. Sports, news, entertainment, creative photos, and archived pictures are supposed to make Alexa's responses more visually descriptive. Mm-hmm. So instead of just hearing words, you'll be able to get answers in the form of photos, much like a web Google result.
So wait, no, she'll still tell you the answer to
she'll
your question,
answer, but also
not
show
just
you
show
an,
you.
Right, but also show you an image.
Okay, because I can see it now. You ask for the capital of some Uzbekistan, and just up pops a picture, and you go, okay, well, that's real clear. Give me a name. Give me a city.
But they haven't specified yet when exactly it's going to go live, but they have announced the partnership with Getty Images.
What takes them so long? It's 2018.
Probably all legal stuff.
Instant gratification time. Yeah, legal stuff. That's probably true. Yeah.
Speaking of Alexa and devices like that, there are some people that think your technology is spying on you. People have noticed when they search for certain things online or they ask Alexa for it, all of a sudden they open apps like Facebook and boom, there's an ad for what they were thinking about or searching for, and they didn't even look for it in Facebook.
Go figure.
I actually have a friend whose mom whispers around the house so that they can't hear her.
She's afraid that Alexa's going to hear her talking, so she whispers. So,
yes, so Alexa or Facebook. Can. I will say I am one of those that put a piece of paper over my webcam.
Well, that's different, because sometimes people have been known to hack into laptops or something, or desktops and cameras, and yeah, just, you know, turn it off. Or if you should suddenly see the little tally light come on, and you're not using your webcam, well, there's another giveaway.
I figure if somebody wants to spy on my webcam and they see me surfing the web without a shirt on at home, then they deserve everything they see.
Oh, gosh. That paints a picture. Thanks so much. But to set some people's minds at ease, because, of course, you bring up a good point, people have searched for something, and all of a sudden there's ads for that something.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's part of what search engines do. It's what they do. So if you're going to search for a washing machine, don't be surprised if the next day you're surfing the web, you're on Facebook even, you're on anything, and washing machine ads pop up.
I think that's what's getting people is they're searching on Google, but then seeing the ads on Facebook.
Well, it's all part of integration and trying to serve up things, as these companies will tell you, to make your experience better. It's creepy. It's weird. But it happens. Now, if you don't want that to happen, then don't search for stuff. But then that makes life very boring anyway. And then how do you get good information? Just expect it. Same thing happens when people say, I sent an email to somebody, and because I mentioned, you know, barbecue and cheap, or let's not spend a lot of money, all of a sudden I'm getting barbecue ads. How do it know? Well, because they're little robotic things are scanning emails. They're not reading your emails, per se, but they are scanning for keywords. Oh, barbecue, cheap, whatever. This. And then there you go. You're going to get a bunch of ads. Now, this typically is Gmail that will do that, because that's Google.
And they're going to keep it free.
Exactly. And they're going to serve up ads for things you may be asking about.
I now, like searching for stuff just to see if they've caught on and show me ads. For
and do they?
Yes.
Yes.
Very interesting.
So there you go. It proves it. Now, if you've not experienced that, go ahead, search, go Google something and see if you don't start getting ads for that something. You know, Google a new car, or Google, you know, a blender for the kitchen, or so, anything. Just to see. And I guarantee you, you're going to start seeing ads for those things. Or send somebody, if you have a Gmail account, send somebody an email where you're mentioning a couple of items, or that you're looking to save money. I mean, it looks for keywords in emails, and it just extrapolates them. You know, save money, washing machine, cheap, whatever. They're just going to provide you with those ads. We've talked for years on this show, no such thing as privacy anymore.
Nope.
You know, technology is very disruptive, many times for good things and in good ways. But this is one that is creepy, freaks some people out. Just know it happens. All right. Don't search for things that you don't want to pop up if somebody's looking over your shoulder, like at work.
Exactly.
Tim Berners-Lee, inventor of the World Wide Web, has launched a startup with MIT called Solid, an open source project that gives users control over their personal data when using the Internet. So that might change some things that we were just talking about. Berners-Lee says he will focus more of his energy on Solid through his company known as Inrupt, and will take a sabbatical from MIT and spend less time working with the World Wide Web Consortium. You talk about Tim Berners-Lee at least once a year on the This Week in Tech History when he invented the World Wide Web.
He did.
So how about that?
Have you ever wondered what your pet is up to while you're away?
No, I don't have one, so I don't have to wonder. That's another advantage.
Well, I have a few, and I do sometimes wonder. But sometimes you can get pet cams, like the Vava pet cam, that not only follows your pet around the house, even under the bed, so you can see them, but you can speak to them, and you can hear them speak back. If they speak, I guess that is.
Yeah, well, if you train them, speak.
Exactly. But not only can you watch them on this pet cam, but it also can give them a treat.
Yep. We had one at IFA in Berlin just a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. Do you remember the name of that one? It escapes me at the moment.
Sure,
but it's there. Search our site for pet cam, pet treats, what have you, and it'll pop up. Because while we were doing the interview, he shot a little treat out to me. Because I was a good boy.
Well, that one was a robot that you can play with your pet.
That's true. It was a robot.
A few years ago, we had a company on. I don't remember the name of the company, but it was the exact same thing. It was a camera that you can load up with treats before you leave, and it had two-way communication. So you can dial in and talk to your pet and then serve them a treat from the camera.
Press a button, and out pops a treat.
I'm going to have to try it out, although I don't know. I have a dog and two cats. I wonder if it knows which treat to give to who.
Because, you know, whichever company it was we had on, their device also had a little laser pointer in it with an app that you can use, you know, in overlays, and you can watch, you know, you can control the laser pointer from your phone and watch your cats chase after the laser.
Oh, it's fun.
Because clearly at work you don't have enough work to do where you're accessing your pet cam
lunch
at
break.
Home.
Well, you know cat people.
Yeah. But those things are going to be more available as more and more people find them affordable. And then you can load them up in treats. And why not take care of your dog or cat or potbelly pig or whatever?
Exactly. They get lonely during the day.
You assume. They might be partying and celebrating that you're not around.
Nah, we hold the food.
Beth's over in Miami in the studio. We know she's busy, so we can just wreak havoc. But then you can access them on a commercial break and give them a treat.
Exactly.
So if Japan's Advanced Industrial Science and Technology Institute has its way, construction workers might be a thing of the past.
What?
They have built HRP-5P, a humanoid robot that can handle a variety of construction tasks when there's either a staffing shortage or serious hazards. The prototype uses a mix of environment detection, object recognition, and careful movement planning to install drywall all by itself. It can hoist up boards and fasten them with a screwdriver. Now, the design doesn't have as much freedom of movement as a human being, but makes up for that with numerous joints that flex to degrees that you would not see in real people.
Whoa. That's great, especially for hazardous environments. You'd rather lose a robot or replace the robot than a human, of course.
And the robot doesn't move as fast as a human would, but the fact that they have this
robot... Have you seen some of these construction workers?
Especially if they get paid by the hour.
Right, they're paid by the hour. It's like, mm-hmm.
But there's video online that I'll have to try to get to our web team of this robot that's actually picking up these drywall panels, putting them up on a wall, and screwing them in.
Wow.
So I guess it's a proof of concept that, yeah, this could work.
Interesting. So don't think of when I grow up, I want to be a construction worker. May not be available when you grow up. Despite increased access to digital games, console gaming continues to thrive, as evidenced by developer Rockstar's plan to release Red Dead Redemption 2 for the Xbox One and PlayStation 4 later this month, on October 26th. Matter of fact, the continued popularity of Nintendo's Switch, which sold 19.7 million units in its first 15 months, also demonstrates continued interest in console gaming. So those of you gamers out there, if you're into consoles, keep it up, because it's going to continue to be supported. Penny in Windsor, Ontario, listens on AM 800 CKLW. Hello, Penny.
I'm quadriplegic, and I have only really the use of one hand. And I am very into gaming. I play World of Warcraft and Diablo 3. My question is, since I am left-handed and can only use the mouse and hardly ever the keyboard unless I let go of the mouse, is there a better mouse than I have for left-handed? I'm using a Logitech. I don't know the number of it, but it has the side keys on both sides. And it's really frustrating because when the mouse goes, I have limited options to get another one that works for me. Hmm. So if you have any suggestions about that, I would really love to hear them.
Well, Penny, we'll do our best. There are plenty of companies that make left-handed mice, and many models have side buttons like the kind that you're looking for. Depending on how you can most comfortably use your hand, you may appreciate something like an Evolent. That's an Evolent vertical mouse. As you can probably imagine, your hand rests on its side when you use it, rather than flat and parallel to the table. That might help you.
And Elcom also makes a left-handed mouse with side buttons and a built-in trackpad that you may find convenient if you want more options to move your cursor or characters around. Azio makes what is called an ambidextrous mouse, which may appeal to you because it has buttons on both sides that you can customize.
Yeah, now, those are all obscure names, but as a gamer, you must know Razer. They make several left-handed gaming mice. Unfortunately, like you've discovered and confirmed over the years, most manufacturers focus heavily on the majority of users, and that majority is right-handed. Between you being left-handed and wanting a gaming mouse with side buttons, you're probably going to have to do some digging to find the perfect model that'll fit your needs.
Yeah, but let us know if any of our suggestions proved helpful to you. Razer, again, certainly one of the ones that's very popular and always coming out with new stuff. And you might check them out. And Penny, just let us know. We hope that we have been of some help to you. Keep gaming and keep having some fun. I think that's terrific of you. IntoTomorrow.com, where we hope to also hear from you.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank account, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problems now by calling the experts at Tax Mediation Services
at 800-610-9070. That's 800-610-9070. 800-610-9070.
Hi there, welcome back to Into Tomorrow.
Graveline with Dave Graveline. I'm Cameron Graveline and Chris Graveline in the studio
and
Russ Mullen Ratio in the control room. Now here's Dave.
Well, thank you, Cam. You forgot about Aunt Beth, though, in the control room. We've got to get him to do a new one where he says, and Aunt Beth in the control room in the studio. Yeah, whatever. You get the idea. But thank you, Cam, because he's always reminding us of important things, including...
Call in, win stuff. Thank you.
Aunt Beth will give the phone numbers for you to call anytime, 24-7, with any tech question you may have.
800-899-INTO. That's 800-899-4686.
Coming up in just mere minutes.
Oh, like I could count them on my hand, probably.
Yes, probably one hand. I don't know. Dave will be chatting with Jeremy Bailenson, the author of Experience on Demand and founding director of Stanford University's Virtual Human Interaction Lab.
I will?
It all fits on his card. Yeah, you will.
Oh, I will.
He's talking about understanding the dynamics and implications of interactions among people in immersive virtual reality simulations and human digital representations in media, communication systems, and games.
Got it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'll prepare myself for that interview coming up in just a few minutes.
And don't forget, you can listen to all 3 hours of Into Tomorrow via our website at intotomorrow.com, where streaming is provided by StreamGuys at streamguys.com.
And we actually have the last 7 weeks worth of 3 hours at a time on that stream.
So if you missed anything, and for whatever goofy reason you don't already subscribe to our free podcasts, you can just listen to the stream and catch up there. Works out very well.
It's time for our Epoch History Feature. IOK is one of the largest and oldest tech shows in the world. With this week's look back at IFA's historic past.
Here's Chris Graveline.
History, EFA.
Oh, boy. Magnetic recording has a long history. It began in early 1925 with the invention of the electroacoustic recording method. In 1926, the Austrian engineer Fritz Flumer was working in Dresden, Germany, and received a patent for a steel-powdered paper tape, the grandfather of all tapes.
Wow.
As this technology wasn't quite market-ready, in 1929, Dr. Kurt Steele built a machine with a steel tape. It was used by the BBC from 1930 on for magnetic recording of sound, but it was very complicated and not very reliable.
All the way to tomorrow.
Yes, and IFA has been the birthplace of many of these recording technologies since that time. That's this week's IFA update, brought to you by Messe Berlin. Be sure to visit ifa-berlin.com.
I shall do just that. Gilbert, driving through Mississippi, listening on Super Talk Mississippi. Hey there.
But I'm going to get ready to retire and go on an extended vacation. I'm trying to look for a good, reliable, rugged laptop. So I was looking at the Panasonic Toughbook. Dell Alienware as being tough. I don't know how the reliability is, or Acer 2-in-1. I'd like to know if you can give me some feedback on those and let me know what you think might be the best ones to go on an extended vacation. Thinking of going maybe over to Asia and all, so thank you.
You're welcome. It's our pleasure, Gilbert. It's kind of what we do, and we're happy to do it for you. At the studio, we can tell you that we've used a Panasonic Toughbook for probably a decade now. We haven't been kind to it either. It's traveled in the hold of more planes than we care to count, packed with hard gear, dragged all over Earth, and it's still going. Based on our experience and the fact that we've seen them riding in police cars all the time, where they probably get bumped around more than most laptops, we don't think you can go wrong with something like a Panasonic Toughbook.
Yeah, in fact, I remember years ago, the first time we were introduced to them, we were doing an interview with a Panasonic rep of the show, and he picked up his laptop, started pouring a glass of water all over it, and then dropped it on the floor.
On purpose.
Picked it back up, dusted it off, and it worked beautifully.
I know. It was like, what? Oh, jeez, why are you doing that? You know, we hate to see any electronics abused in any way, but he was showing us that it is, in fact, a Toughbook. Yeah. And ours, we've unfortunately treated the same way. And it continues to do the job.
Now, as far as we know, Alienware has hardy, heavy computers, but Dell, Alienware's owner, actually makes rugged models of their Latitude series. So you may want to have a look at those. They look about the same as a Toughbook, but they're another option. Now, one thing we should ask you, though, is what kind of traveling you'll be doing. 90% of extended travelers do just fine with any regular laptop they can carry around in a backpack or leave inside an RV. Now, unless you'll be camping in remote locations away from civilization and without solid shelter, you could probably just use a regular laptop and get more processing power for your dollar.
Rugged models are heavy and they're pretty expensive. If you can get away with using a regular model instead, you'll get more machine for your money. Most people who go on extended vacation stay within the bounds of civilization. If that's the case, you don't really need to bother with anything special. Laptops can take the stresses of most travel.
Yeah, they can, and they do. When you call in and participate like Gilbert did, you automatically qualify for some cool prizes. For example, these days we have the following available. No promises, no guarantees, but if you hear something you'd like, mention it when you call in. We'll do our best.
From Magnet Pal, we've got rare earth magnets with telescoping grabbit sticks to pick up metal items.
From Reolink, 1080p wire-free battery-powered indoor smart home cameras.
From Backtrack, C6 keychain breathalyzers to easily estimate your alcohol level.
From Quai, we've got some Quai Fit wireless earphones for fitness training.
Monoprice has sent us some MP Select mini 3D printers. Very cool. And all you have to do is call in and participate. 800-899-INTO.
800-899-4686.
Hi, I'm Joan London. If you're worried about your parent or loved one living alone, like I was, and you want reliable senior care information, then call A Place for Mom, the nation's largest senior living referral service.
Finding an apartment that was on the courtyard with the view of the trees, the view of the ducks, the stream, the creek, all of that, that was what I needed.
You'll get free information on assisted living, Alzheimer's care, nursing homes, even important financial information. Here's the number.
To speak with a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-806-3752. That's 800-806-3752.
A Place for Mom is a free service, and you can trust them to help you. So if you're struggling to find reliable senior living information, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
To speak with a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-806-3752. That's 800-806-3752.
Nothing is as constant as change, and that certainly describes the tech world. Well, we here at Into Tomorrow are here to help you with any consumer tech issues, complaints, concerns, problems that you may be having, some tech rage that you might want to share. I'm Dave Graveline. Thanks for joining us. Our next guest works to understand the dynamics and implications of interactions among people in immersive virtual reality simulations. That in and of itself got our attention. He's also the author of Experience on Demand and founding director of Stanford University's Virtual Human Interaction Lab, Jeremy Balinson. Jeremy, welcome into Tomorrow. How you doing?
Dave, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. The first thing right out of the box, and your book does a great job of it, is what virtual reality is, how it works, and what it can do, because we get so tied up, especially in all of our years doing this show, and people talk about VR and augmented reality and all the other mixed realities, et cetera, that sometimes we stop. We have to stop and go back and say, whoa, wait a minute. What is it that we're talking about? How do you best describe what VR is?
For our listeners who haven't done VR, it's like you're inside of a movie as opposed to watching it. What makes VR different is two things. One is it tracks your body movement. So the way you interact with the scene is by walking or moving your hands or turning your head. It's as if you are just grabbing objects and walking around a room. The second difference is that it's perceptually surrounding. Wherever you look, you see things. There's sounds that are spatialized. There's touch that goes to your skin. And it's a perceptual experience that's not looking just at a screen. Wherever you are, the content is there.
You truly are immersed in whatever it is that you're experiencing in virtual reality.
Yeah, we like to say, my colleague Byron Reeves is a first person to have this quote, is the brain has not yet evolved to understand that a virtual experience isn't real. If you think about how long evolution has taken, it's only very recently that we've had digital media and extremely recently that we've had this amazing stereoscopic virtual experiences that, you know, for so long when we've taken a step forward, objects have gotten bigger when they get closer, and that's how VR works. So the brain is still trying to figure out if VR is real and how compelling these experiences are.
And what a great way to put that in that kind of perspective, too. I think it's awesome. Every time I visit, especially China, and we're seeing various trade shows and they're showing virtual reality or they strap somebody on, unlike the U.S., which is such a litigious society, they don't have a lot of lawsuits. So they let people wander and literally fall over on the floor and walk into the wall and all that sort of thing. Boy, that would never go here because everybody would say, oh, my gosh, the liability. But what's bizarre about that is that you watch people literally falling over because they're falling off a cliff or doing something and hitting the floor or hitting a wall. That is part of that immersion, is it not? I mean, if the brain's taking over, you're in that scene.
Dave, I could tell you stories of lives I've saved in my lab from people just deciding to spontaneously do a backflip, people diving to cross this chasm that isn't there, and they're heading towards a sharp table. I actually just published about 4 weeks ago an article in Slate that has my 8 rules for safety in VR. So what you were describing, just letting people run around walking walls, is not what we do in my lab.
Good.
It's not what I recommend for home consumers. I think you raised the right point, though. VR is so immersive. You know, we need to solve these possible safety issues. How do you not run into the walls, and how do you not step on the cat, and God forbid, walk into traffic or drive a car with this stuff?
Oh, of course. I mean, I've had listeners that tell us, oh, it's so cool, and then I tripped over the coffee table, and it was like, well, how is that so cool? Are you bruised? Are you okay? Yeah, it's healing. You know, it was like their concern was that they were just so immersed in this VR that they really didn't pay much attention. It's like they really did take the fall. Well, yeah, in real life, you did. So you almost need a padded room, I guess, if you're going to do it right.
It's funny you say that. So I work with a lot of National Football League teams to help their quarterbacks and other players get better through a company I co-founded called Striver. And the first team that we installed a system for was at the Dallas Cowboys. And Jason Garrett surprised us when we showed up to install all the hardware. He'd actually built a room with a padded floor and cleared out all the safety hazards. He'd built the perfect safety room. And he really wanted his quarterbacks to go into VR, look around, recognize that defense, call out their plays really loudly, do their three-step drop. He really wanted them to go through the body motions of implementing a play so that they could get extra, not just mental rehearsal, but muscle memory for what to do given different defensive packages, and the padded floor helped.
Wow. That's cool, because I'm thinking that has to make a difference. Then the only thing you're worrying about is the VR headset perhaps being damaged or maybe, you know, bruising your forehead or something. But at least they can literally let go and just do everything that they should do. And if they fall, they're hopefully not hurting themselves. But you got to learn a whole lot more, I think, in that kind of an environment.
The mantra that I take is that VR is not for everything. So, Dave, when I talk to the big tech companies, and I spend a lot of time at the leadership level in Silicon Valley trying to help them navigate issues of not just physical safety but mental safety. What should you and shouldn't you do in VR? And, you know, because of some of the things you're bringing up, you know, I don't want a world where people are using VR for hours and hours per day. I don't want a world in which people are, you know, surfing the web and reading email through VR. VR is not for that. It's really meant to be this intense, immersive experience that's very special. It's for things that you couldn't do in the real world, things that were impossible to do or dangerous to do. So I think one way around the things that you're talking about is, you know, in my lab, we've got a 20-minute rule. VR is great. But I have yet to find any experience that's worth sticking in there for, you know, more than 10 to 20 minutes. So one of the ways to not get hurt is just not to be in there for too long at once.
And Jeremy, I am so delighted to hear you say that, because other people think they need to spend like a LAN gaming weekend with VR, you know, constantly, maybe an occasional bathroom break. And that's not what it's for. And I'm glad that you brought that point up. There's so many good things that it can do. Not, you mentioned the NFL type stuff. But also, how about the medical field? And I'm sure you guys are doing that, too, where a surgeon can go in and perform a very delicate, very perhaps unusual surgery several times using VR before he does it on the real person. And that has to play an important role, certainly into tomorrow, if you will, as to where we might be able to utilize this more.
So surgical training for doctors has been one of the pillars of VR for 2 decades. Mm. But I want to tell you about a project. It's run by a brilliant doctor named Ann Dubin, and we've created, it's called Project Braveheart. And what Braveheart is, it's for kids who are going in for heart surgery. Before they go in, they put on the head-mounted display, and they get to go to the waiting room in the hospital. They get to meet their anesthesiologist. They get to go to the room where they're going to get the surgery, and they get basically stress inoculation. They get a tour at their own pace of what the surgery is going to be like. We actually teach them breathing exercises while they're inside VR, so that they can then, when they go to the real place, practice safe paced breathing. And we are just analyzing data on a controlled study where we're examining the effects of this pre-stress inoculation for patients and how effective it was.
That's awesome. And the fact that it helps the kids in that manner is truly a great use of VR. And glad to hear that. A lot of people think, oh, it's for gaming. Well, of course, and that's what's getting a lot of attention. But, boy, things that you just described, Jeremy, should be getting more and more attention. We're glad to help that, as a matter of fact. So there's got to be some psychological effects of virtual reality in general, good and bad, I'm imagining. And I'm sure your virtual human interaction lab has encountered some of those.
Yeah, so we tend to focus on the good ones. I applaud all of those who are looking at the downsides of VR experimentally, things like addiction, things like distraction, things like learning muscle memory for pretty bad skills, for example, extreme violence. My lab, we just tend not to do that work. We focus on the positive. One of the areas we've been doing a ton of research on since 2003 is in the realm of empathy. And in 2003, we built the virtual mirror. Imagine, Dave, you walk up to a mirror, and you're in VR, and physically you move your right hand, and in the mirror you see your avatar's right hand move. It turns out when you move around and see your avatar move synchronously with you, it takes about 4 minutes for the brain to accept that avatar as it's actually an extension of yourself. It's called body transfer, is what the neuroscientists call it.
Wow.
Then you become someone else. We swap your identity. You become a woman. You become a different skin color. You become a different age. The next phase is, now that you become someone else, we repeat the body transfer. And then we network in a second person into VR with you. And that person, you know, walks up to you and then treats you differently based on your skin color or your gender or your age. You experience some prejudice while wearing the body of someone else while walking a mile in their shoes. And what our studies have shown, you know, fairly consistently over a decade, is that when you compare this VR journey to control conditions like role-playing, pretending you're someone else, doing imagination of experiencing trauma, reading case studies, in general, this tends to produce more behavior, more attitude change than these control conditions. Now, I do want to point out, it's not a magic tool. It doesn't solve racism. It's one experience we can use to try to help ourselves get better, but it does seem to be making traction over the years.
That's awesome. I mean, the fact that you're doing so many different things and concentrating on the positives without ignoring the negatives, because there are some and we've got to deal with them by all means. But we invite our audience, man, I could talk to you more and more, Jeremy, about this, and I hope we get you back on again soon, because there is so much more to talk about. Meantime, you've got to visit the Virtual Human Interaction Lab. It's easy. VHIL.stanford.edu. And we'll get you there, too, when you visit intotomorrow.com. Jeremy, you're a delight to chat with. I invite our audience to check out your book, Experience on Demand, What Virtual Reality Is, How It Works, and What It Can Do, by Jeremy Balinson. Thanks so much for joining us. Look forward to chatting with you again about this.
Dave, thanks for all the work you've done for 2 decades. It's just a treat talking to you.
Yeah, thank you, sir. It's a pleasure as well. Again, VHIL.stanford.edu. Do check it out. VHIL.stanford.edu. I'm Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow continues right here on the Advanced Media Network.
I owed the IRS $10,000.
The IRS garnished my wages.
They put a lien on my house.
The IRS is the most powerful collection agency in the world. They do not give up until you pay.
I couldn't sleep. We were being audited. I called Tax Solutions Now, and a great big weight was lifted off my shoulders.
I called Tax Solutions Now, and they got the IRS off my back.
Tax Solutions Now had my wage garnishment lifted in 48 hours.
Tax Solutions Now can get you help. Our agents know the rules, can stop the pain, and get you the best deal. We connect you with a team of former IRS agents and tax professionals who will get the IRS off your back.
We saved our home and overcame the most powerful collection agency in the world.
Call Tax Solutions Now. Time is running out.
Call 800-910-9962. 800-910-9962. 800-910-9962. 800-910-9962.
What is your second screen? Is it your tablet, your smartphone, your laptop, or is your second screen now your TV because you're much more involved with your devices? Chris is shaking his head. Yes, his second screen is now his TV.
And I realized my second screen was my TV when I kept having to rewind a show I was watching because I missed it because I was too busy on my first screen, which was my phone.
I know. I get distracted all the time. It's a good thing that my DVR has pause. Because I pause and then I'll address something that popped up again on the tablet or the phone. That's the life we live these days. By the way, I'm Dave Graveline.
I'm Chris Graveline.
I'm Beth Gatrell. And this portion of Into Tomorrow is brought to you by the Dexcom G6 Continuous Glucose Monitoring System. Make knowledge your superpower. Visit Dexcom.com.
There you go. That's DEXCOM.com. Very easy to get to, and you do want to check that out. Carl in Rapid City, South Dakota, listens to the free, did I mention no charge, Into Tomorrow podcast. Hey, Carl.
Number one, these are all Apple irritation. Supreme remotes, terribly irritating to have a device that you pick it up, not only is it slippery, but it's symmetrical from end to end. I had to put a sticker at one end of my Apple TV remote so I don't pick it up backwards. And two, I had to put some tape on to keep it from slipping off my sofa arm and into the cracks. Terrible design.
I agree.
Zoom. I can get a nice zoom with this classic zoom gesture in the Safari browser. Why can't I have that on every application on my iPhone? Part three, you have many app writers that have great handwriting recognition. Why isn't it a system-wide feature? Number four, I know you're trying to get data through Siri, but Android, you can dictate when you're offline, and it will do this fine. But if you've got your iPhone and you're in the boonies and you want to send out a text, you should be able to dictate your text without having an online connection. And number five is the question. Apple apparently thinks you want every photo you've ever taken on your iPhone. Just exactly what is the best way to get just a couple photos on your iPhone and the rest of them on your iCloud storage instead of trying to put everything on your iPhone?
Well, Carl, if I may, being the only iPhoney that's not an iPhoney around here, I'm surrounded by iPhoneys is what I guess I meant to say. Sounds like you need an Android device. I've got the new Note 9. No, not boo. Galaxy Note 9. Love it. And don't have any of those problems that you've discussed with your iPhone. But that's beside the point. iCloud, to answer your question, backs up your pictures and plenty of other things on your phone, and it works along with newer phones to optimize the amount of room that those pictures use up. But it doesn't give you options as to how to set up that storage. If you delete a photo off the phone, iCloud will notice it and get rid of it online, too. If you want to be able to store pictures remotely and delete them from your phone, you have to use a different storage solution.
Now, and the good news there is that there are plenty of free options. Dropbox, Google, Flickr, and plenty of others will jump at the chance of having to store your pictures for you, since that's how they get a lot of their users from people who keep running out of room on their phones.
There's one pretty annoying way of just using iCloud to do it, too, but it's not how iCloud is designed to be used, and it will be a clunky workaround. You can save them to a folder in iCloud Drive, then delete them from your iPhone app. That should work, but again, it won't be seamless or easy. You're expected to store documents in an iCloud Drive, not photos you just took, so the workflow isn't very natural.
Yeah, but Carl, that will answer your question, I hope, so you can give that a shot. Let us know what you end up with. We appreciate your tech rage in the earlier part of your call and understand where you're coming from all the way into tomorrow.
This
This is an urgent health notice for all residents suffering from back, neck, knee, and wrist pain. You may qualify for a pain-relieving brace at little or no cost to you, but the deadline is fast approaching. Simply call the Health Alert Hotline now.
You heard right. You may qualify for a pain-relieving back, neck, knee, or wrist brace. These items may even be covered by Medicare or your private insurance. The Health Alert Hotline is your brace company. These specialized braces have been tested for pain relief. Call us toll-free right now to determine your eligibility and to learn how to use your private insurance or Medicare to minimize your out-of-pocket cost. Don't wait. If the deadline passes, you may lose your opportunity to get a pain-relieving back, neck, knee, or wrist brace at little or no cost to you.
800-428-1570. 800-428-1570. 800-428-1570. That's 800-428-1570.
Are you a digital native or a digital immigrant, if you will? Well, let us here at Into Tomorrow help you with any digital quandary you may be experiencing. You know, you can call us anytime, 24/7, at the number that Beth is about to give you because you want to make a note of it. Here, I've got a pen. Jot this number down.
800-899-INTO. 800-899-4686.
Ah, very good. That's Beth Gatrell. I'm Dave Graveline. He's Chris Graveline.
Reminding you that this portion of Into Tomorrow is brought to you by the OWC Envoy Pro EX with Thunderbolt 3, the ultimate external SSD for photographers and videographers in need of ultra-fast and ultra-portable storage. Learn more at OWCDigital.com.
Let's go to another listener from WDEL out of Wilmington, Delaware. Hey, Stephen.
I recently moved from one side of Wilmington, Delaware to the other. I'm close to the Amtrak station and rail, and there's a power station nearby, and I've noticed my signal dropping. It's slow to download anything because I don't have Wi-Fi. Should this stuff that's nearby impact my cell phone?
Well, Stephen, as long as you're not 3 feet from it, a power station is not likely to interfere much with your cell phone service. Certainly not in the way it almost certainly interferes with your AM radio signal, for example. But you listen to us on FM, so maybe you haven't noticed that.
And moving from one end of town to the other is enough to change your cellular reception, though. Different areas have different numbers of towers, and it's possible that your area is just not very well serviced by your service provider.
And now, since you do get some signal and what you need is to improve it, a booster might be for you. These devices can be mounted outside your house for better reception with an inside unit that will sort of inject power and repeat the signal so that you get better service inside. You can look into devices by WeBoost and SureCall. Both have several models that can improve your coverage, and some not for very much money at all.
And some for a lot of money, too. So you can check that out, though, Stephen, and hopefully help you out. Don't expect when you move across town that all of your service and coverage are going to be the same, because, as Chris mentioned, things change, you know, as you do move around. I hope that we've helped you out. By the way, if you don't already subscribe to our free once-a-week tech newsletter, visit intotomorrow.com. Put your email address only in the box. We don't share it with anyone. Your safety and privacy is important to us. And you'll get things like tech news and Beth's tech tip of the week this week.
This week is about National Breast Cancer Awareness Month, which is October. There are some great online resources available with tips, blogs, and places to make donations, as well as other important information you need to help you with this disease.
There you go.
And 10 video games that you're going to want to buy this month.
Alrighty, among many other things, it's this week's Into Tomorrow tech newsletter. You sign up at intotomorrow.com.
Bringing you the latest in consumer electronics and technology, this has been Into Tomorrow with Dave Graveline. To participate with Dave and his tech geniuses and win prizes anytime 24/7, use our free Into Tomorrow app for your iPhone, Android, and netbooks. Available in your app store or call 1-800-899-INTO. That's 1-800-899-4686. Be sure to visit our website anytime to read our show notes and watch our ITTV videos at intotomorrow.com. And join us next week as we bring you further Into Tomorrow.